Right now, it's time for Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'm really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll be speaking with noted dog trainer Martin Dealey about, well, training dogs, among other topics. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. This is Jeff Beck, the Constipated Duck, here on Talking Animals. Jeff Beck, a constipated duck, an animal tune of sorts, as we ease into today's edition of Talking Animals. My name is Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few moments, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Martin Dealey, an Orlando-based dog trainer who, during his 30-year career, has developed an international reputation as a gifted and accomplished trainer of dogs and of dog trainers, as well as educator and author. Find out more about Martin and his work over the years, and an organization of his holding its big annual conference later this month, when we speak with Martin Dealey in a few moments here on Talking Animals. And as usual, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or DJ at WMNF.org. Right now, though, it's time for a couple of animal news items and or announcements, starting with this coming Saturday, March 6th, it's Bark in the Park, and this edition is The Bark of the Irish. And by that we mean, of course, the Humane Society of Tampa Bay's annual Walk for the Animals at Al Lopez Park. Again, this Saturday, March 6th, from 8:30 a.m. to noon. And if you want to make a difference in the lives of homeless pets, then form a pack, raise funds for the animals. More information and to sign up, it's not too late, of course, at humanesocietytampa.org. And of course, closer to home, we've got our own big animal event on the horizon. So as a WMNF event, we are planning to present the first ever Talking Animals Festival, which will include live music in the form of 12 bands or more doing animal songs and major pet adoption. We've got all kinds of other cool things, animal art and more. This is all taking place April 11th from noon to 5 with the Lowry Park Band Show right here in Tampa. Lots of bands, lots of animals, adoptable and otherwise. Of course, all are invited, including dogs on leashes. And there'll be lots of good food and drink, and lots of people attending this free event. May I underline free? So I invite you to join us and table at the event or be a vendor. Go to the festival page at talkinganimals.net for more information and the application form. Look forward to seeing you on April 11th, Talking Animals Festival. Okay, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Todd Glass with part of a piece selected for today's show and guest Martin Dealey away, Biting a Puppy, on today's Comedy Corner here on Talking Animals.
People are nice deep down. You can tell by the way they treat animals. Most people are nice to, well, most people, not everybody, but most people. You ever see, like, no one walks by a puppy and is like, "What's up?" No, you see a puppy. You ever see a puppy so cute? I don't know how to say this. You like, it's so, you want to bite it. I see the tables here tonight that know exactly what I mean, because they look at each other like, "I know what he means. You want to bite it, of course." And other people are like, "What? Yeah, you want to bite its cute little face. You want to mush it and squeeze it and just, why is that?" Some people go, "No, you just pet it." Yeah. No, you pet it doesn't work. Petting it. Oh, there, no, you start petting it, then you're like, "Hey, you're getting bit." Oh, so cute. My neighbor had a, their dog had a litter of golden retriever puppies. Oh my God. There were 6-week-olds sitting in the whelping box, and one tried to scratch itself and it fell over. I'm like, "That's it, I'm eating you. You're too cute."
All right, that's Todd Glass with a part of a piece called Biting a Puppy, taken from his CD Thin Pig. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as the archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs, including our recent shows with Geraldine Pazanowski and Melanie Joy. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page. We'd like you to become our fan, and our Twitter page. We invite you to follow us. Plus, there's a place to subscribe to our email newsletter, so we can keep you posted on forthcoming guests, program news, and more, including information about the Talking Animals Festival. That's all found at TalkingAnimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, Martin Dealey. So let me outline a few things about him. As I mentioned earlier, he's an Orlando-based dog trainer who, during a career spanning 30-some-odd years, has developed an international reputation as a gifted and accomplished trainer of dogs and of dog trainers, as well as educator and author. Martin is a co-founder, past president, and executive director of the International Association of Canine Professionals, IACP, which holds its annual conference March 18th through 21st. He's also a colleague and friend of Cesar Millan, writing the foreword to Millan's book, Cesar's Way, and appearing in Millan's training DVD, Sit and Stay, the Cesar Millan Way. There's much to discuss here, so with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Martin Dealey to Talking Animals. Martin, are you there?
I'm certainly here, Duncan.
Great. Well, thanks so much for joining us today on Talking Animals.
My pleasure. My pleasure to be with you.
Well, great, great. And, I mean, as one measure of how much other excitement there is, I've already gotten an email question for you. We haven't even started the show, so people are excited. But let me just say that, of course, you've been a dog trainer for 30-some-odd years, as I just mentioned, and for, you know, a good portion of that time training people to become dog trainers themselves. So looking at this from that fairly singular perspective, I'd be interested to hear how, you know, your view on the veritable sort of population explosion of dog trainers in recent years. I mean, in preparing for this, I saw some statistics that in some part of this last decade, the number of animal trainers, at least I think 50% or more of whom work with dogs, has almost tripled. So you know, what a Cesar Millan rod here. But no, in all seriousness, what are the factors that brought us to such an enormous number of dog trainers, and what do you see as the pros and cons of that explosion?
I think a lot of it, you know, has occurred because society has changed. It's not just the television programs, Dogtown or Cesar or anyone else. That has kind of, if you like, motivated them to say, I brought up a dog, I love dogs, I think I can go into this, I think I can make a living of it. But a lot of people now are working, both husband and wife, all day long. They want the companionship of a dog, but they haven't got the time to train it, or sometimes they haven't even got the ability to train it, or the patience. And so they asked someone to come along and help them. At one time, I know when I first started, it was just friends that came and helped you. You didn't have many dog trainers.
Sure.
You did it yourself, or your neighbor showed you what to do. But today, you know, we're quite willing to pay for someone who's going to help us keep a dog within our family and make our family a happy unit by having a dog in it.
Sure. Well, with that sort of influx of practitioners, I guess, into any field, inevitably you see kind of a wide array of confidence, of skill sets, much mm-hmm. less sort of talent. So for those three or four of us who haven't yet become dog trainers, and in fact might need one, what are the chief traits we should be looking for? I mean, certificates, experience, what sort of things really are sort of at the top of your list?
Well, I suppose really if I have a criticism, it's that there is no real recognized qualifications nationally. The association I run, the International Association of Canine Professionals, does have certification, and when members come and join us, we look at their experience to ensure that they can be either an associate or a professional member. Associate generally has less than 5 years, a professional has more than 5 years, but we do look at the work that they've done as well.
And how do you, sorry, Martin, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I mean, how do you quantify that beyond just the actual years that they may say or that you have reason to know they've done it? Are there other specific factors that you can measure?
There are schools. I mean, there's two very, very good schools. In fact, there's more than two. But the two that we work very closely with is National Canine and Triple Crown. National Canine is in Columbus, Ohio, and Triple Crown is in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, that's where we'll be having our conference in 2 weeks' time. And they bring out some very, very good students. But, of course, one of the things that we always say is experience, that university of life of working with a lot of dogs, because every dog is different.
Sure.
And, you know, you've suddenly got this nice little cute little kind of, I don't know, Cavalier King Charles, and the other minute you've got this big kind of Great Dane you're trying to deal with, different temperaments, different approaches, different ways.
Sure.
So within our association, We try as much as possible to educate people into all methods, all techniques, all tools, and make them more versatile. Because, you know, as I say, every dog is different.
Sure, sure. And are there, I mean, what's the value, I mean, within that sort of very difficult set of choices? And again, like you say, situation is different. So, you know, are testimonials crucial or referrals? But yes. Then again, referrals from whom?
Yes, I think testimonials are very useful. You've got to make sure, of course, the testimonials are what I call valid testimonials. Because someone's come along and they've just had a little housebreaking problem, maybe. Sometimes can be difficult. But your dog has got perhaps an aggression with other dogs' aggression, or a cat chasing one, or something of that nature. So it's nice to look through testimonials and find out whether other people have had similar problems to you. But, you know, it's good to be, if you like, referred to a trainer. We have a referral system where people can go to our website and find trainers in the area. We have a little kind of questionnaire thing which says how to select a trainer. So you can go through that. But the most important thing, you know, Duncan, is meeting that trainer and saying,
sure,
can I get along with this guy?
Yeah.
Or this girl? For the simple reason being, at the end of the day, they're going to be training you.
Right.
They're helping the dog. They're showing the dog. And that may be the easiest part. The most important part is, the same way as we say about relationships with dogs, we want a relationship with our trainer. We want a relationship with our clients that they say, we trust you, we have confidence in you, we're following through. Because I might be able to get a dog to change, but I need you, Duncan, to get that dog to change and to work with you too.
And I certainly need to make some changes. Well, Martin, we've already got a call here and an email. Let me get some of those. Let me first tell people this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with veteran dog trainer and author Martin Dealey. We invite you to join the conversation, as others already have, by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. Let's take a call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Martin Dealey. Question for Martin?
Yes, I have a question for him. I have a one-year-old boxer,
mm-hmm.
And he's very obedient, very smart, housebroken, but he whines a lot.
Mm-hmm.
When he sees other dogs, he whines a lot, and I've noticed it's gotten progressively worse,
mm-hmm.
since we had a 13-year-old greyhound that we just recently had put to sleep,
mm-hmm.
and it's gotten a little worse since that. I was just trying to ask if, you know, what remedy I could work with him to stop his whining, like when he sees other dogs.
You've actually mentioned a lot of things which are a problem. First, boxers can be a little bit excitable. They can be a little kind of, I'm going to say hyper, but they're absolutely fabulous
hyper
creatures. They're lovely dogs to work with. But if you had an older dog, he may have bonded with that older dog a lot and therefore depended on him. Because you've got an older dog, you often let them out together, let them relate together, and they become the partners rather than you becoming the partner of your dog. And therefore, he's lost a little bit of confidence in himself, maybe. He sees other dogs, he wants to join them. And there is a lot of things happening here. Without seeing the dog, it's not always easy to put your finger on it. But what I would say is that he may be looking to you for help and assistance in, if you like, becoming himself again, becoming a dog again. And one of the ways to do that is basically not to reinforce this, to show confidence, to walk with confidence, to act with confidence, and not to kind of reinforce it in any way. If he was starting to look at another dog and possibly begin to whine, I'd turn him the other way. I'd redirect. In other words, giving something so that he looks at me. I'd give him exercise where we're relating together. If he likes to retrieve, I'd be doing things like that, but I'd be doing it in a controlled way, so he has to sit before he fetches it. The important thing that he sees you now as the confident leader that can take care of him, and he doesn't need to go to other dogs. There's a lot of things happening there, my friend. And if you've got a trainer near you that was with the IACP, go to canineprofessionals.com, search them up, and get them around just to have a talk. Let them have a little look at him. Because, you know, it's not going to get better. And one of the things we often do is we say, it's okay, don't worry, we're fine. And all he's hearing is basically, good boy, I like that, and I'm not too sure what to do either.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your call and your question. Of course, thanks for your great answer, Martin.
Give me a call. If you go to my website and give me a call, I'll spend more time talking with you. More than pleased, my friend.
Well, we've got a few callers now and some emailers who I think, much like our first caller there, are going to try to seek some free over-the-air expertise. And frankly, I might be guilty of the same thing before we're done here today. But
we're all guilty of it at times.
Of course. But something that sort of raised, and actually our email question in a way hooks into this too. So even as the field has really, it seems like at least from an outsider's perspective, drastically kind of changed, become far more crowded, mm-hmm. I guess I imagine that over your 3 decades in the business, there are certain elements and storylines that remain kind of largely unchanged. I mean, for example, when new clients come to see you, I mean, are there just certain issues that you most often see over and over, behaviors most frequently that you sort of have to deal with or try to undo by the time mm-hmm. they've reached you?
Yeah. Today, particularly, in the olden days, I think owners looked at it as a dog and they had to treat it like it was an army private. Today, I think owners look at them as though they're family members and they treat them like children. And if I have the same thing I tend to send to a lot of owners is they overtouch their dogs, they overtalk to their dogs, and they overstimulate their dogs. And they don't teach them the limits and boundaries which are necessary for all of us in life to be accepted as a good citizen. Mm. And that seems to be the way forward these days. And just like that gentleman said, or you just said, you know, I think I'm guilty of that as well, Martin.
Yeah.
They all know it, but they feel often that by loving the dog or caring for the dog or giving them a treat now and again, the dog will put it right himself. Dogs are wonderful opportunists. And when someone says to me, oh, he's not very bright, and I usually say, but he is, he's trained you extremely well.
Yeah.
You know.
Sure.
And we seem to be saying these things quite a lot to people who come with a variety of problems, Duncan.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just one thing. It's
I'm
a variety
sure.
of problems. And, you know, it is a responsibility. And I like to keep a dog in a family for life. That's the most important thing in my business. If people call me and say, Martin, that dog is just gone up to heaven across the rainbow. We had him for 14 years and we loved him. Thank you for what you did. That makes my day.
Sure, sure.
You know.
All right, well, let's try to get some other folks into the conversation here. Let's take that emailer who actually emailed before we even really got started here. I think they certainly deserve a turn. Their email question says, we have a 12-week-old American Bulldog mix puppy. We have read that it is not good to play tug-of-war with bulldogs. Unfortunately, that is all he wants to do. No other type of play engages him. He especially likes tugging on pants, ankles, and shoes while they are being worn. We know this is a bad habit and are working to stop the behavior without much success. Any ideas? Thank you.
A lot of dogs like to grab hold of trouser legs and things of that nature, not just bulldogs. You might find that some of the herding breeds do very, very similar as well. And, you know, one of the things that we don't use very much in the house, we always use it outside when we go for walks, is a leash. And many times, you know, with a little dog like this, we don't want to be punishing all the time. We don't want to, let's say, be correcting all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But we want to be guiding them into good things. Now and again, a little correction, where he doesn't always know where it comes from, can stop them doing these behaviors. But if you guide them as well by the use of a leash, by giving them something else to play with,
mm-hmm.
Something else to carry, what I call stress relievers, the kind of nylon bones or sterile bones or something of that nature,
mm-hmm.
and then use something to stop him doing it, guiding him carefully not to do it, then you can avoid this habit. But when you have a dog that really is fixated on it, it takes a little bit of expertise again to help you get through it.
So we need a dog trainer, not just somebody you can listen to on the radio, but someone in the flesh. All right, let's take another phone call with that in mind, though.
Thank you.
Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Martin. Do you have a question for Martin?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I have a 6-year-old miniature pincher,
mm-hmm.
and as far in the house, he's always very good. He's obedient when he's outside,
mm-hmm.
but once he's on the leash, for some reason, it doesn't matter where we are, he has to be at the end of his leash,
mm-hmm.
pulling constantly.
Mm-hmm.
He walks on his back leg.
Mm-hmm.
He pulls so hard. And I've tried different things, choke collars and stopping until he puts a little slack in the leash before starting again,
mm-hmm.
and different things that he just will not walk good on the leash.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well, as you say, you've tried different tools, and there are different tools. There might be a little kind of what they call a micro prong collar might help, or a gentle leader head halter might help. something of that nature, and certainly some trainers can help you with it. One of the things I find with dogs like this is basically we keep following them. And what I often do with a dog like that is either stop and wait till they stop, or I will give them and when I say a correction, I mean a low-down correction. Sometimes we're pulling our dog upwards. They're putting their weight into it. They're putting their muscle into it. You lower your hands to about the level of the dog's neck. You give him a little pop sideways, like a little flick of the wrist, as you might do with a badminton racket or something of that kind of thing, or a table tennis bat. It's just that flick of the wrist. And you turn and you go the other way. You never follow him. And you might have to do this 4, 5, 6, 8, 10, 20 times. And all of a sudden, they're looking and say, hey, are we going anywhere? And you say, only when you walk with me, sunshine. And you tend to find that instead of him leading, he begins to look at you. What we often do is we're so habitual in what we do and the directions we go and in following them that they think they're in charge. So if we make it so they looks at you and says, what do you want to do? What are you going to do? Where are you going to go? Then it can make a big difference.
Well, thanks another great question and yet another great answer, of course, Martin. This is Talking Animals. My guest is veteran dog trainer and author Martin Dealey. To join the conversation, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. So, Martin, we've been talking directly and indirectly, I guess, about the kind of, you know, fairly explosive growth of the dog training profession. But also, if you've noted, there's a range of trainers and a range of dogs and stuff, and we've just in our emails and phone calls we've experienced that. So, kind of not coincidentally, you're the co-founder and exec director of the organization you've already mentioned, the International Association of Canine Professionals, or IACP. So I know the IACP is not strictly limited to dog trainers, but maybe you could give us the nickel tour of who are members and what it is and what it does and that kind of thing. How many members?
Yeah, we have 1,400 members. Internationally, over 18 countries. Most of them are in America, Canada. It was started basically because we wanted to get more versatility. There was a big move about 14 years ago to promote just what we call positive reinforcement. And, you know, there has got to be a balance in training. We all have certain kind of repercussions, if you like, for what we do when we do something a little bit wrong, specifically if we know we've done something wrong. And there was also a movement to ban certain tools. And we felt we wanted to be able to have this versatility to actually work with them. But we also wanted to work with all professionals because we found that certain professionals like veterinarians were very concerned about consortiums being set up or companies of veterinarians being set up. We found pet shops were being concerned. And we wanted to network. We wanted to help each other and we wanted to educate. So basically, the IACP, Canine Professionals, was established to educate and to create versatility and particularly to make sure that when we're using every tool that's available to us, we use it correctly.
Mm-hmm. And so, as you alluded to earlier, the annual conference is later this month. And do I have this? First of all, am I saying it right? Hutto, Texas.
It's in Hutto, Texas.
And why Hutto, Texas? I've never heard of the Hutto, Texas, other than the fact that your conference is there. Why there? Is that because it's near the school you alluded to earlier?
We have a very, very good sponsor, Triple Crown. We were friends with them well before they got established in Hutto, when they established this big old. It's 50,000 square feet. They've got kennels, but they're just some of the most wonderful trainers at Triple Crown. And we go there, and they're just tremendous hosts. We've got all the space we want. We can take all the dogs we want. We can show all the dogs that we want and show people how to train them.
And there's also speakers, right, Martin, if I'm not mistaken? There's speakers, pretty noted speakers as well right?
Caesar has spoken there with us. He's become a very good friend. The monks of Newskeep, Brother Christopher, Temple Grandin this year, Ian Dunbar.
That's great.
All what I call leaders in dog training and in the dog world. We have people from the grooming world, people from the veterinarian world coming and talking to us so we can, if you like, network and gain more knowledge to help each other.
And again, that is later this month on March 18th through 21, right?
Yeah, 18th to the 21st.
Yeah.
At Hutto in Texas, and Temple is coming on the Saturday to speak to us.
And is there a website, sure, that must be specific to the organization that you might want to give out?
That's right. It's canineprofessionals.com.
Okay. And as well, while we're mentioning websites, yours is Martin Deely, DEELEY.com for those.
Yeah, and if the people are in Florida, just go to floridadogtrainer.com. That's me.
There you go. All right. Well, sadly, we're sort of nearing the end of the time, and there's all kinds of people feverishly phoning and emailing, so let's at least try to get a few more of those in. Here's an email saying, first of all, by the way, the subject line is great guest, so I should report that to you, Martin.
Thanks.
But the email itself says, hi, we have a nine-month-old lab who is very sweet. She's a big chewer. Today, she ripped open yet another box of Kleenex. We have a mountain of chew toys. Choose and keep her as active as possible. She has chewed our TV remote, too. Any advice? All our possessions are now nailed to the ceiling. Thanks, Curtis.
She's a Labrador. She's a retriever.
Yeah.
I have four of them, and all of them go out from there into my paddock to work carrying something. They're
mm-hmm.
always carrying something.
Yeah.
It's a silly thing to say, I suppose, but I also have a cocker, which will go into the garbage, and our garbage cans now are on the water cistern in the toilet. Our garbage cans are on the counter.
Right.
Because she will go into them as well. They're retrievers.
Sure.
We can do things like we can booby trap now and again by putting empty Coke cans on the top so they fall over when they go to them. We can put them out of the way. We can close doors. Or we can give them things which they like to carry. I've got a little Labrador by my side at the moment, and she has always got in her mouth a soft toy. She doesn't pull them apart, but she's got a soft toy. If they do pull them apart, give them something they can't pull apart.
Yeah.
But often with dogs like this, it's because they're not getting enough exercise.
Hmm.
They don't get enough to, if you like, challenge their brain. And when they come back in, they say, I think I'll have a nap now. Because dogs love to nap.
Sure.
Only when they've had that kind of exercise and that fulfillment in life as well.
Huh. Okay. Very good. Well, let's try to work in. We're literally just sort of in our last moment or so here, but let's try to squeeze one more phone call in. Hi, you're on the Talking Animals with Martin Deely. If you have kind of a brief question you could ask, that'd be great.
I do. I have a 13-month-old collie, and she is terrified of trucks. I mean, literally terrified.
Mm-hmm.
She shakes uncontrollably. She pees. She runs like mad.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do to help make her less afraid?
It's not easy. That's the first thing. With a lot of noise sounds like gunshots and things like that, some dogs are just born gun shy, if you like, or noise shy, particularly diesel trucks.
Okay.
The noise of them, things
they
like that.
They are all diesel.
Yeah. What I try to do as much as possible is to find a place where I'm away from that, where I can do things that they enjoy. In other words, if they like retrieving, I do that. If we just like to walk around and play, I do that. If they like to do a little bit of agility, I do that.
Mm-hmm.
I do something away, and then I gradually go closer and closer and closer.
Okay.
Some people say you can use, like, recordings, but I find it's not quite the same as the real thing.
Okay.
But it's a slow process, and it's a difficult one. What you might do is not feed her in the morning, take the food with her, and just give her a bit of kibble at a time. But go to a place well away so you can just hear it in the distance on the wind and then move closer and closer.
Okay.
It might take you a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 months.
Well, I've got all the time.
Good girl.
Okay, well, okay. Thank you so much for your call and the question. And again, Martin, thank you for your great answer. And I am afraid now we are at the end of our time. And there's plenty of other things I was hoping to discuss with you, and I didn't get my own free advice question in, but maybe we'll do that another time. But Martin Deely, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. Again, it's Martin Deely, DEELEY.com or floridadog.com, you said, Martin?
Floridadogtrainer.com.
Dogtrainer.com, sorry.
I'd be delighted to talk to you, Duncan, or any of your listeners.
All right, well, thank you again, and good luck with the conference later this month, and thanks so much for making the time to join us today on Talking Animals.
Thank you for inviting me. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Great, thank you. Okay, it's Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. There'll be a prize. Animal-related prize, a pair of tickets to see the Arctic Monkeys, April 2nd at the Ritz Theater, to the first person who calls up 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune. It's named an animal tune on Talking Animals.
Buffalo soldier, dreadlock rasta. It was a buffalo soldier in the heart of America.
All right, we have just about reached the end of today's edition. of Talking Animals. The program airs twice a month, specifically the first and second Wednesday of each month, so we'll return next Wednesday, March 10th, when our guest will be Patty Reagan, founder of the Center for Great Apes, a 100-acre sanctuary for chimps and orangutans in Wachula, Florida. I hope you'll join me then. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby McKenna. My thanks to her. Again, mark your calendar for the first Talking Animals Festival, April 11th at Lowry Park. And we're going to take, we got a full bank of phone lines. Let's pick one real quick. Hi, you're on WMF. Can you name that animal tune?
Buffalo.
Buffalo?
Buffalo Soldier.
Oh, Buffalo Soldier. Okay, what's your first name?
Wendy,
you are our winner. We have a winner, folks. Everyone else, stay on hold. We'll get your information, Wendy. Okay, so again, the Talking Animals Festival, April 11th at Lowry Park. Don't miss an opportunity to be a vendor or a table at the festival. More information on that is at talkinganimals.net. We have a festival page on the Talking Animals website. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. We're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal tune. This is Florence and the Machine with Rabbit Heart. Raise it up on WMNF Tampa.